DiscerningHearts.com presents Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I am delighted to be joined by T.M. Doran, who is a writer, educator, and consultant. An adjunct professor of civil engineering at Lawrence Technological University, he is the author of the popular novel, Toward the Gleam. He has contributed to the Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, USA Today, New York Times, and the Detroit Free Press. With T.M. Doran, we go inside the pages of Terrapin, a Mystery, published by Ignatius Press. Dennis Cole and his three best buddies from childhood gather for a weekend reunion. On the first night, one of the men is murdered. Or is he? A professor of engineering by day and a writer of detective fiction by night, Cole and the other survivors try to piece together the mysterious fate of their friend. The suspenseful story moves back and forth between the unfolding reunion gone bad and childhood events that involve these friends who grew up on the same street. Looming largest in the memory of Dennis is the striking character of his widowed father, T.A., Marine veteran of the Korean War and blue-collar philosopher. In his interactions with T.A., Dennis tries to make sense out of life, but instead of simple answers, puzzling questions of evil, human freedom, and the possibility of transformation are all T.A. seems to provide. These questions follow Dennis through young adulthood and beyond. They finally catch up to him in the surprising and thrilling climax of this novel. A murder mystery and a coming-of-age story, both with many twists and turns, Terrapin is about man's potential for doing either good or evil, his tendency to do the latter, and his response to the consequences of his actions. We now begin our conversation with author T.M. Doran. Tom, thank you so much for joining me.
You're welcome, Chris, and it's very nice to talk to you again.
I love your work.
Thank you.
Well, it's a wonderful story, again, essentially a mystery. What is it about that particular genre that really speaks to your heart?
Well, I think I love mystery. I think there are many people that love mystery, even if they are not attracted to mystery stories in the classic sense. We like to be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
We like to have to try to discern what's going on. And so in composing the story, I wanted to write a puzzling, head-scratching mystery, but my other goal was to have the story predominantly be about deeper themes, more transcendent themes. So I didn't want those transcendent themes to get lost in the mystery story, but by the same token, I wanted the mystery story to be captivating too.
I love Toward the Gleam because it really drew upon that experience of the Inklings and of just that pulling in the great authors in that period in England. And now with this book, you attempt to try to do kind of the same thing. There's a running theme that travels through it.
Well, I appreciate you mentioning that, Chris, because I think so too. Although, at first glance, I think people would say, gosh, these are two very, very different books.
Mm-hmm.
Toward the Gleam is a big, sweeping, kind of cosmic story. Terrapin is more of a compact, personal, sort of story. So in that sense, they're very different. But I think in terms of the themes that they're exploring, I think they're very similar. And I have been pondering recently this quote that I read from Flannery O'Connor. And apparently someone asked her what constitutes a quote-unquote Catholic novel.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, I think it's a story, quote, one in which the truth as Christians know it has been used as a light to see the world by. So I think from her perspective, what she was saying is it's not so much a Catholic story, but it's a story from a Catholic perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in that sense, I believe, I think, in that sense, toward the Gleam and Terrapin are very similar.
Well, Terrapin has an interesting premise. Of course, its protagonist is Dennis Cole, who just happens to be an engineer, by the way.
Right.
Why don't you fill us in?
Dennis grows up on a blue-collar street in a suburb of Detroit with four very close friends. And years later, he has a reunion with three of these friends in Ann Arbor. And all of a sudden, some very terrible things start to happen. And these friends are trying to figure out what's going on. And the story itself then consists of two timelines. One timeline is 7 days right here in the present. But the other timeline consists of events from the pasts of these characters as they grew up. And eventually, these two timelines converge at the end of the story with some big surprises and some other surprises. So that's what the story is all about. For those who have read Toward the Gleam, one of the things that I've said is that Dennis Cole is no John Hill. Dennis is a very different type of person. He's very conflicted. He's got some big challenges in his life, and that's a big part of the novel. What's going to happen to Dennis? In a sense, it's a re-exploration of the story of the prodigal son, but not the inevitability of the return of the prodigal son, the possibility of the return, but not the inevitability, because human freedom, the ability to say yes and no, enters into all of that. And there's a lot of that explored, the human freedom aspect explored in Terrapin.
Dennis Cole may not necessarily be based on you, but part of his experience must have been drawn from experiences in your own heart, just because you write of them so clearly.
That's true. I was working on an early version of Terrapin even before I had started Toward the Gleam. And I put it aside because I was getting bogged down, and I love to read biographies and histories, good biographies and histories. And I happened to be reading a biography of Harper Lee, and I learned that she had drawn on a lot of her personal experiences when she wrote To Kill a Mockingbird.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of a transforming kind of thought for me. And when I went back to Terrapin, I started working along those lines. So, yes, some of the experiences in the story come directly from my own experiences. And that was one of the challenges of the book, was to take those experiences that I had and to integrate them as seamlessly as I could with entirely fictional events.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the key is that it's a good story. That has to come first, doesn't it? As opposed to, I need to write something ideologically satisfying.
I really do. I think that if the story doesn't hold up, then people aren't going to read it. And so I worked hard on the story, and having read dozens and dozens and dozens of mystery novels going back to the early 1900s and the Sherlock Holmes stories in the mm-hmm. 1800s, I really felt comfortable that I had it in me to write an interesting mystery story. And so I started from that perspective, but then all of these other themes sort of permeate the story.
Well, let me ask you this, as someone who loves the mystery. You have G.K. Chesterton with Father Brown, and you have Sir Arthur Conan Doyle with Sherlock Holmes. Two very different types of mysteries, because Sherlock Holmes, it was never fair, I thought, sometimes, some of the plot twists that took place. Chesterton is very fair with Father Brown. I mean, he guides you through it. As a mystery author, how did you traverse between those two, I think, extremes in mystery writing?
Oh, that's a great question. I remember reading a number of years ago, it might have been John Dixon Carr, who was considered to be the locked room murder mystery master. I remember reading, and one of his characters, by the way, was very loosely based on G.K. Chesterton, one of his major characters. But I remember one of the things that he said, which was that the solution to the mystery need not be probable. It has to be possible. And so you can get out there a little ways in terms of stretching the imagination of people in constructing the mystery, but it has to be a possibility. And the second thing you have to do is you have to be fair with the reader. So as you go through the story and as clues are deposited through the story, there has to be a sense of fairness. You can't be intentionally leading the reader astray. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the guideposts that I try to follow when I write a mystery, whether it's some of the mysteries that are embedded in Toward the Gleam, or whether it's the big mystery in Terrapin, or a mystery that I'm writing right now.
Toward the Gleam, is it fair to say that was a adventure mystery where Terrapin is, I think it reminds me of the film noir, those wonderful films that were done in the 40s and 50s that we remember because they were black and white, but it had a lot of personality. The characters, well, it was very character driven.
I think it is too, and I'm a fan of those films.
It shows.
I've seen a lot of those films, and I'm a fan of those films. Now, some of them are pretty nihilistic, and some of them are maybe a little grittier than they need to be, but still, they're fascinating films, and I think that's right. I did try to incorporate some of that grittiness in Terrapin.
How would you describe the various characters that we will encounter in Terrapin?
Well, I even though they grew up on the same street, I think they're pretty diverse in terms of their personalities.
Mm-hmm.
Their personalities are very different from each other, and yet they manage to establish a very sustaining friendship with each other. And part of that has to do with one of the characters who I consider to be a linchpin in the story, and that's Laurie.
Mm-hmm.
Laurie is a character who sometimes she seems on the periphery of the group because the other four characters are boys.
Mm-hmm.
But really, she's a glue that at many times holds these very diverse personalities together. So very different. Greg is extremely impulsive. Ben is very cerebral. Tony's kind of a little bit stubborn, but very handy with his hands. And Dennis, Dennis is the main character, and the story between Dennis and his father is a central story, also. So I would that would be the way I would describe them. On the other hand, one of the things that I tried hard to do with these characters was to have them break out of a mold. So even though Greg is an impulsive character, sometimes he behaves a little differently than that. Even though Ben is very cerebral and scientifically oriented, he doesn't always behave that way. And I think that's true of us as human beings too. Even though we have predominant characteristics, that doesn't mean that we're constrained to always be that way.
Yeah, there's a complexity that is really refreshing. When you mention the aspects of a good noir movie, or even in its writing, you mentioned how they tend towards the nihilistic, that there's an absence, an emptiness that occurs. It's the fatalism in the writing. And there's a lot of literature that's like that now. Even though you read it, it leaves you empty when you're done. You might have gotten through it, and the celebration is the fact that you even got through the book, because you got to close it and you go, oh, okay. You don't experience that with your work. Is it because you're diving for a deeper truth?
I hope so. On the other hand, I'm trying hard. I'm trying hard for that to be a proposal to the reader rather than an imposition of the author. And that's something that I learned from reading about J.R.R. Tolkien, who is a very strong believer that stories should not be allegorical in a sense of the author imposing his will on the reader, but that they should be applicable in a sense that the reader can look at what's being said in the story and what's happening and can apply it to their own experience. And so I am searching for those deeper truths, but I'm trying to give the reader the freedom, the same freedom that God gives us, to be able to make choices about, you know, where they choose to go with it.
Talk to us about the influence of those philosophers. I mean, you're an average guy, Joe Engineer, and yet you're fed spiritually by the writings of philosophers, you know, whether it's Blaise Pascal, Augustine, Aquinas, any of those. How did just absorbing their thought change the trajectory of your life?
Tremendously, I would say. I have had an interest in great thinking going back to early adulthood, and read individual books. I've also got an encyclopedia of philosophy here. I'm looking at them right now, four volumes, and I actually refer to them when I want to either learn more or check up on something that I'm doing. And I love that. I love that sense of competing ideas. I'm someone that believes that people of faith have nothing to fear from reason, from logic, from thinking, from philosophy. I think Blessed John Paul II projected a lot of that in his writings. Faith and reason, the splendor of the truth, all of the rest of it. So I've always had an interest in that, and I think that I desire to put more of that, to put some of that into the stories, because I don't see very much of it anymore out there in the books that I read.
Hmm. What has been the reaction from readers to your work that has surprised you?
Well, I think people are surprised at what Terrapin turned out to be in comparison to Toward the Gleam. There were a number of readers that wanted me to do more Toward the Gleam. And I have told myself that I want to challenge myself when I write a story to start with something new, to start with something fresh, rather than to rely on something I've already done. So I think one of the reactions has been a little bit of confusion about maybe why I went in this different direction. On the other hand, it's interesting. I've talked to a number of readers who have liked Terrapin more than they enjoyed Toward the Gleam. It may have, even though it's a more compact story, it may have a broader audience, because there are some people out there that might have a hard time relating to the characters and the story and Toward the Gleam.
What's it been like working with Ignatius Press on these works?
Oh, I've enjoyed it a lot. I really have. The editorial relationships that I've established have been great, and I would say that the editorial help that I've received have definitely made both stories stronger. Whenever you're going through the editorial process, there's always some push and pull, and you always have a tendency, human tendency, to be protective of what you've written. But ultimately, what you want is the story to be a better story, stronger story, and more interesting to the reader. And I think as I've worked with the editors at Ignatius, that's exactly what they've helped me to do.
As we've talked, the two styles of books are different. In coming works, what do you feel you'll be leaning towards?
I think the next book is going to be as different from Terrapin as Terrapin was from Toward the Gleam.
Wow, great!
I'm exploring a very compact in terms of the timeline, a couple months timeline, in which a number of characters are rounded up by the Soviets after World War II, and that's an area of history that I've been fascinating by for years and years and years. And they're put into a, not a gulag, not a concentration camp, but a temporary detention facility near Berlin. And these characters are forced to interact with each other, very different characters. And it's a very desperate situation. And what is going to become of them? What do they see life as meaning, if it has any meaning at all? So it's in that sense, it's going to be a little bit of a darker story, but I think the same themes that we've talked about, in that case, the theme of faith, the theme of trust, the theme of generosity, are going to be explored through these characters.
Well, I think that's what's really something that works well in Terrapin, is that exploration of the response at virtue, or the lack thereof. I mean, there is a degree of suffering that occurs, and the response to that, I'm trying really carefully not to give anything away on the book because it would spoil it. But so I'm speaking in a bit more of a general way about those elements. But there is, I mean, and that's something that we all struggle with, is how to respond in virtue to those moments we encounter suffering.
That's right, and I think that the events that occur describe that in the book, and the relationship, I think, that explores that most deeply is the relationship between Dennis Cole and his father.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of what his father experienced in the war, in terms of some of the turmoil that occurred in their family, and then his father, T.A., raising Dennis and trying to form Dennis, but at the same time respecting his freedom as he does this. And so, yes, that's certainly, and the suffering that both of them experience, not only from the events that occurred in their life, but in part from their relationship, which is a strained relationship in many respects.
Mm. You also have that experience of the, can I call it solidarity, that community that is connected because of the friendships and how the friends respond.
In spite of their weaknesses,
exactly.
In spite of their failings, in spite of their sin, their friendship perseveres.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that was an important theme of the book, because with some of the things that occurred in the story, it would have been easy for those friends to have just split up, given up on each other, tried to put the past away, etc. But they never did that. They kept persevering in their friendship right to the end.
This very personal question, but have you had those struggles yourself? Because it, as I said, you write about it so effectively.
I certainly have. I have some of the most traumatic things in the story that occurred were fictional, but certainly I've had friendships that have been a struggle to sustain over the years. But I'm happy to say that with those friendships, even though there may have been a hiatus for a few months or a year or so, that those friendships are still strong. And so I think exploring that was important to me, to try to project some of myself into what was going on in that story.
Hmm. I think that's the key, isn't it, Tom, of good literature that we love to enter into, is that it helps us practice the virtues, though we may never be in those exact experiences, even to the extent of the extreme ones that can be presented. It allows us to kind of emotionally practice the virtue in what our response may be. So if we encounter something that isn't close, maybe an inkling of, we know what it feels like. We know what we would like to be able to do.
It does. And when I read great literature, I have two hats on, and that is the predominant hat, the hat in which I'm learning from the experiences that the characters are having in the story and what the author is showing me. And the other hat I have on is the hat of the student. is trying to learn as much as I can from very different styles of writing, from a Dickens to a Dostoevsky to a Jane Austen, and to try to learn that what made them be great.
Well, I think we can put there the style of a T.M. Doran. There you go. Any final thoughts, Tom?
Well, my final thought would be I hope that people who read the story enjoy the story as a story. I hope they're challenged by it and they're entertained by it. That's the predominant reason that I wrote the story. So I wish that for anybody who reads it. I am going to keep working. I love to write. I just love to sit down and write, and I do it everywhere and anywhere. So I'm going to keep working, and I hope that I am able to produce some good things in the future.
Well, we look forward to that. T.M. Doran, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Chris. It's a pleasure talking to you.
With T.M. Doran, we've gone inside the pages of Terrapin, a Mystery. To learn more about this book or to obtain a copy, go to Ignatius.com, the website for its publisher, Ignatius Press, or you can find it at any fine Catholic bookstore. To hear and or to download this discussion along with many others, go to DiscerningHearts.com. This has been a DiscerningHearts.com production. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, Insights from Today's Most Compelling Authors.